Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
JRDOnline.com and Roni Zone Productions proudly present Roni Zone Radio live with you on Talk Shoe. Roni Zone Radio, a very different show where we talk about everything from God to Star Wars and everything in between. So now let's get connected. We welcome you to tonight's show, and we hope that you'll bring your comments, your questions, and we'll all have fun together here on Roni Zone Radio live. What's up, everybody? I'm here with Mr. William Lundeen and also Mr. Andrew Bettis. Say hey, guys.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Now, in my 43 years of life, a lot of people have called me crazy, and this is probably another one of those events that will go down in the annals of my life as, well, Jeff, didn't you think that was crazy? Well, it probably is. But here's a framework in what I want to cover today. We are not here to change anybody's mind. I just want to just toss that out there right now. What I do want to do is talk about America and the religious diversity that is here. There's a lot of different people that are here. And so what we want to do is talk about the history of America, why we got here, and then as time progressed, we'll talk about different points where either that was challenged or enlarged to incorporate something else. We're going to talk about just a lot of different things. So we are going to jump in right now. So, okay, guys, let's kind of quickly walk through history as a point of beginning. Now, why did we as Americans leave England?
I don't think Americans left England.
Well,
I think people leaving England.
Pre-Americans.
Well, I can take this one, Jeff.
Okay.
Really, it's the British that came to America. Lots of people confuse and say that they're actually Puritans, but they weren't. They're actually separatists that believed in the separation of church and state. And when Queen Elizabeth succeeded Bloody Mary, who had she was very strict Catholic and persecuted a lot of Protestants. When Queen Elizabeth took over around the year 1570, about midway through her reign, she established a real strict policy of separation of church and state. And these separatists didn't really identify with that. They believed that religion was they kind of intertwined into their culture. And so they actually split with the Puritans, who, you know, going back to the days of Oliver Cromwell, had been fairly fundamentalist, but actually the majority of Puritans in England had accepted Elizabeth's policies simply because they didn't want to see the large-scale slaughter and torture and massacring that had occurred under Bloody Mary. But these separatist pilgrims, as we call them, actually left because they cited, like a divorce, I guess, irreconcilable differences with the Church of England. And that's why they came over here. And they settled at Plymouth, and I guess the rest is history.
Okay. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is that there's a lot of talk, and sometimes in history, things get a little fuzzy, and so, you know, but the basic premise is that you were either in the Church of England, and that's how you worshiped, and so we felt, as a group of pilgrims back at that point, that we wanted to worship how we wanted to worship, and so we broke off and came to America. Now, actually, it was, you know, obviously an early point where we were trying, we were making it up as we go. America as a nation is a young nation. And so there were a lot of things that were unknown. And so let's just talk a bit about the founding fathers as we know.
Well, essentially, you got two guys who are kind of, who were actually friends, but they're kind of on different ends of the spectrum. First, you got George Washington. And to understand George Washington's beliefs, he's not a lot like current President Bush, whose religious beliefs are very much, they're very evident in his political actions and, you know, the stances he takes. George Washington was a very religious man. He was raised in the Church of England. Church of England, of course, being the Episcopal slash Anglican Church in the United States, but because of his work in the French Indian War and the Revolutionary War, he had to deal with a wide group of people and lots of differing cultures. He had to deal specifically with the French a lot in the recently dropped off. Jeff, you there? So we'll just chill.
Oh, hello.
What's up, buddy?
Well, this is more fun than Barrel of Monkeys, really.
And,
can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So let's kind of pick up the pace. Now, I'm sorry I didn't hear what anyone was saying when I was gone. But we had some deist folks. We had some Protestants. We had some Catholics. I guess the point is that it was a diverse group.
Right.
Correct? Okay. So even in that early group of Americans, there was a diversity. And then as we move forward, I guess kind of what I'm getting at is there are mentions in the early documents as America was being founded, put together, that there were mentions of a creator and that kind of a thing.
Right.
So, I guess what I'm trying to say is that as it began as, we do not want to be a part of the Church of England. We want to worship as we do, and therefore, at this point, we want to show that we have a belief in God, and God has created us, and he has given us inalienable rights and different things. So they were pretty distinct markers that they wanted to set. And, I mean, I don't hear any kind of mention of any folks that had a non-belief, like an atheist belief or anything different at that point. I mean, would you guys agree, or is a deist thought that kind of different than a mainline Protestant? What would you guys say about that?
For his time, I'd say people thought Thomas Jefferson because they were so more religious on the whole than we are now.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Jefferson was viewed as sort of the prototypical atheist, even though he really wasn't,
right?
Just because he had such practical views on, secular views on separation of church and state, he was viewed as an atheist, but in reality, he was not.
Now, let's kind of directly speak about that. From what I understand, help me if I misspeak here, but a deist believes that God created everything and then left it to itself, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So there is a belief in God, but God at this point right now is not involved in this world, in our life, that kind of a thing. That's what a deist believes. Okay. So as we move forward, we can see things progress, and the thing that really kind of strikes me as we look forward is that there are certain things that have already been in, like the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and mentions of that, of belief of where we are. But as we move forward, I think there's a really pivotal point when we talk about the Scopes monkey trial in 1925. Now, that is where we had the famous trial between William Jennings Bryan and Clarence Darrow, had the famous trial about incorporating the theory of evolution in teaching at school. So the end of that trial is that both views would be taught. Is that correct?
Kind of.
Okay.
Really, the actual result of the trial was in favor of the state of Tennessee. Bryan's side essentially won, but you kind of get the way the end of the trial worked. Darrow was kind of, on the fifth day, he was held in contempt of court. And so he really, although he was still able to do cross-examination and stuff, he was really hindered in his ability to make arguments because the judge, of course, I mean, at this time, it was really tough because religion was still kind of, you know, interwoven into society. It wasn't until the mid-20th century when secularism kind of took off. But at the end of the trial, Bryan's side won, but Bryan actually offered to pay the fine that was Scopes was ordered to pay $100 fine because he lost the case, and Bryan actually offered to pay that fine. So you kind of get the sense that both sides won.
Okay. I think what's interesting is after that trial, then we see that there are other trials after that that basically flip things around. And I mean, if you just kind of look at Epperson versus Arkansas, McLean versus Arkansas, different court cases after that that are hearing the same type of subject, it changes it. And I guess, I mean, the separation of church and state, let's talk about that for just a second, and we'll come right back to talking about this. Now,
hey, Jeff. One of the things to point out from most of those, you know, we have a number of cases that we looked at to cite there. And in most of the cases, these were state issues.
Mm-hmm.
And when the federal government got involved, it was basically to say whether the state had overreached their authority and whether they were right or wrong in their ability to make their proclamations. But it wasn't really the federal government coming in and saying, yes, you may do this or do that as far as this issue or, you know, whether it's religious and whatever is right. It was more on the grounds of, yeah, you had the authority to self-regulate.
Okay.
Well, that kind
of
works.
That's an important distinction when we talk about the government is the difference between the federal government and the state governments.
Okay.
It kind of works in both ways, too, though, because, William, what you were citing, the states actually will cite the federal government, too. There's a case that in 2005, it kind of spurred the entire idea of intelligent design. It was Kitzmiller versus Dover in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And essentially, the school board there had said that since there were so many holes in the theory of evolution, that teachers were instructed to teach the fact that the evolution was not foolproof and that there was a possibility for intelligent design, which is basically saying that the stuff in the Bible could be true. The ACLU got involved, and essentially what happened was that the circuit court ruled that it violated, as is the case in many of these, that it violated the Establishment Clause that says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. So,
okay.
ACLU won that one.
Okay. Now, obviously, we are not here to discuss what's the most viable view, okay? But what I think kind of concerned me about just thinking about this whole thing is that I don't understand why both can't be discussed. Now, I understand the separation of church and state, which is not in any governmental document, but it was in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote, and the concern he had of the government enforcing religion. And so in that way, you can kind of see the concern the ACLU has along the way. But I think that we both should have both views should be discussed, and I think people should have opportunities to make up their mind. Ara has something to say. Go ahead, Ara.
Yeah, that's interesting that you asked that question, because I've been watching a lot of creationism versus evolution discussions, and I actually, it's not anything that's been very important to me, because I have a lot of other things on my plate.
Sure.
But one of the things that I've noticed a lot of people are saying that feel that intelligent design shouldn't be taught in a science classroom is that intelligent design is about religion, and it's about a belief of how the world evolved and spirituality, whereas evolution is sort of piecing together in a science way. And so intelligent design can be discussed, but it should be discussed in a religious forum, and evolution should be discussed in a science forum. I don't really have an opinion, but mm-hmm. that's kind of what I've been hearing from out there.
Okay. And I do... I kind of understand the thought that it does spring from, obviously, the Bible is the biggest document where we find that being, you know, kind of laid out. And so I get that. But I just, it's almost, I guess it's just the separation of church and state that kind of stands in the way of it being kind of offered in a full-fledged discussion of both views. And I think it bothers me a little bit. I mean, we as Americans should have the opportunity to listen and then make up our minds what we believe. I don't know. I just, to me, it doesn't seem like it's a, I don't know, it's a tough thing, but that's just what I think.
Yeah.
Now, Go ahead, Ara, sorry.
I was going to say, I just ran across, I don't know if you've heard of the flying spaghetti monster, and I literally just ran across it 10 minutes, which I might call divine intervention or something,
okay.
prior to this. And the flying spaghetti monster is this deity that was created by a professor at a school that was going to be forced to teach intelligent design along with evolution. And his concept was, I think you can Google it, that his theory that the world was created by a flying spaghetti monster had just as much merit as intelligent design. And obviously he was not a supporter of intelligent design.
Right.
But on this site, somebody brought up all of these different spiritual concepts of how the world was created from all sorts of different cultures, all sorts of different tribes. I would really love a full-fledged discussion where it's not science pitted against religion, but where we can learn about just become enriched and learn about all the different ways people believe we came into existence.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to jump in with something similar, that there are so many different creation stories out there from the different cultures, and you know, not all of them are really, you would say, religious, but more cultural, about, you know, how does a people define themselves based on their past. And you know, sometimes when they say, well, you know, this versus creationism, there's an assumption in there that it's a particular creation story, when there's many variations out there. And another, you know, another argument which you could see someone doing is saying, well, once again, if you're going to teach one, then you need to teach all, and so far we've indexed 600, so how many days of the year are you going to spend on it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely this could probably be an entire show, but I'll just kind of leave it as this, is that I don't think people listen enough and discuss enough. I think there's a lot of yelling. There's a lot of stone throwing. There's a lot of posturing. All that concerns me in a lot of different ways. But I think that there is a fear that anything that is
polar opposite or different than you believe, that you almost, that even listening to it can affect you. And that just is so wild. But that's rampant, and we're definitely not going to dive into that. But I just, you know, as Ara said, and I'll just kind of register it too, I definitely like to see more kind of constructive dialogue and understanding. Everybody's thumbprint's different. Everybody is going to see things differently. If all of us saw a car accident, for lack of a better term, we would all see something different, all of us. And even in as we go through this life on this planet, that, you know, we're going to see things differently. And I think that's what kind of brings us together. It's because we all bring something different to the table. I'll leave it at that, because William's going to start singing me again. So at this point right now, because of the separation of church and state, we only have evolution discussed in school. And that's kind of where we are. And I just want to touch briefly on, the sticky situation of prayer in school. Now, the only thing I kind of want to throw out there is that the schools back in Little House in the Prairie days, okay, we'll start there. I mean, obviously we can go farther back than that, which it's probably a similar situation, I would think. The schools and the churches use the same building. Okay, so therefore, there were probably Ten Commandments on the wall. There were probably Bible verses or different types of banners on the wall. So therefore, when the same building was used for school, obviously it was already there. So it's kind of easy to say, okay, A stands for Abraham, which is in the Bible, and da-da-da-da-da. So, I mean, I would think that's kind of where the prayer in school kind of got momentum at that point, is because it was in the same area, and possibly at that point, the only church around was probably a Protestant type of a church. Okay, so but I totally understand folks that have a non-belief and all that. I mean, I wish we could come together. We can't, at this point, let's pray at home, pray in the car, I don't know. I guess, just can't pray in school unless you do it really sneakily and only close one eye, and I don't know what. But, we can talk about the Pledge of Allegiance and the whole under God wording. Andrew, can you talk about when the term under God was added and why?
Yeah, absolutely. It was June 1954. It was congressional legislation. It added actually just the phrase under God to the National Pledge of Allegiance. In terms of challenges you had, the earliest coming from Jehovah's Witnesses, simply because they refuse to declare allegiance to anything lower than God.
And correct.
It states under God. So modern day Pledge of Allegiance challenges mainly have been coming from, you might have probably heard this name before, Steve Shapiro. He's the legal director of the ACLU.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And his belief is that, he actually is quoted as saying, the government should not be asking impressionable school children to affirm their allegiance to God at the same time that they are affirming their allegiance to the country. So it's a real secular viewpoint. That, of course, clashing with President Bush, who believes that when we pledge allegiance to one nation under God, citizens participate in an important American tradition of seeking the wisdom and blessing of a divine providence.
Okay.
So it's been an extremely sticky situation for the past couple of years. Probably heard about the Ninth Circuit ruling in 2003 that wrote, I think it was 2003, could have been 2004, but it actually supported the position of the secular. Bill O'Reilly calls them secular progressives. I don't necessarily agree with that, but the secular standpoint. But recently is 2006. There was a case in Florida, Frazier versus Alexander, that also said that children had to have approval from their parents before being asked to say the Pledge of Allegiance with the phrase under God in it. So,
okay.
Very sticky situation.
So again, you know, we kind of see that there is legislation passed, and then some clarifications along the way. And most of the time, schools that are public in nature are just saying, "Well, we're just not even going to do it then," because then we'd have to change the wording and different things like that. So they would probably most of them just say, "Okay, we're not going to even do that," because you know Jehovah's Witnesses do believe that their only allegiance is to God, and anything else, you know, they're not going to pledge their allegiance to. But I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that the term "under God" was placed in the Pledge of Allegiance for wartime. Is that correct?
That would make sense. I guess you've got Korea going on at that point. But it's after World War II, so it might have just been.
Or maybe, because I know we'll talk about "In God We Trust" a little bit, but I think that was in response to you know, the Russian situation where there was no religion, and America at that point really wanted to align themselves based on, you know, the founding fathers to God. So anyway, these are just things I just kind of want to run by and make sure I'm thinking correctly. So if I'm not, I apologize. Okay. So then that's the next thing we do talk about. On our money, it says "In God We Trust." Now, probably back many years ago, it was not a problem because, you know, the thought of God, the belief in God, and to be honest, I want to kind of toss this out. A belief in God does not make you a Christian per se, because they've done a lot of polls, and I don't have them in front of me, but there's a wide area of people that believe that there is a God. Well, do you go to church? Well, no. Well, are you part of a religion? Well, no. But I believe there's a God. So "In God We Trust" on money, you know, I'm actually surprised, and I'll go on record, that there hasn't been just a huge just outcry because of everything else we've seen, that it be taken off the money. And I guess it would be, you know, probably the cost and all that. But does anybody
it'd be
have
interesting any? I mean, I was going to say it'd be interesting to see someone protest that. I mean, it's one thing to have you and your kids, you know, stand there and not say "under God" when they're pledging, mm-hmm. and get it videotaped and on the news.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to see if these different folks, if they felt strong enough to dispense of all their cash and only use plastic or something like that. That'd be an interesting.
That is interesting.
Stand.
And I know you're not trying to be, you know, smart alecky, but you're being honest. You know, if the belief is that strong, how much are you going to adhere to that?
And there are ways to sign up for gold-based monetary systems online and through banking.
Huh. A very interesting point.
Yeah, Jeff, let me also say this. I don't mean to offend anybody, but I think you have to, if you take an objective look, agencies such as the ACLU, you see a certain degree of superficiality with them in that they go after things that are, you know, red hot off the iron. The thing about money is, it's not when you pull a dollar bill out of your pocket, the first thing you see is not "In God We Trust."
Mm-hmm.
It's a face on the front. It would be very, very difficult, in my opinion, to make an argument that some writing on a piece of paper would offend somebody. Much so as forcing them to say something or forcing them to stand for a flag. That's just a personal opinion. I think it would be very hard to win the case on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar. As kind of the token tinfoil hat leftist, there are people who most certainly protest having that on the money, but they also see New World Order on the money, and they don't really see that money is going to change. At the same time, nobody forces me to read my money. You know, I'm not in line and I have to recite what's on the bill. All I have to do is spend it, which is pretty easy. So I think with money, it is a lot harder to make the argument, especially with the tremendous cost, because nobody's standing in front of me saying, read it out loud,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how often do you really read your money and know really what's on there except the number, like 5, 10, or 100 if you're lucky?
No, that's absolutely true. And and you know, I just want you to know, R, that you know you are fully able to make your comment here. You are welcome here, and I want you to know that. Okay.
I hear you. I'm just so curious about other people's opinions. I don't want to talk too much.
No. But I just, you know, don't feel like you're talking anything. Okay. All right. But I think that's definitely a valid point. I mean, money's there to spend. I mean, it never spends too long in my pocket anyway. So, I mean, I'm not even sure what e pluribus e unum means anyway. So, I mean, that's just me. I'm just glad the money spends, and hopefully I still get some. But now, as a country, I want to bring up a name and talk about just some other things, okay? So, Madeleine Murray O'Hare. A very famous champion of the atheist point of view, okay? You know, obviously that is a sharp divide from the majority of the thought in America, at least from what we understand. And but I think she was just the spokesperson for possibly a larger group of people. I mean, I don't believe that she was the first one that kind of woke up one day and go, you know, I don't think she said, you know, I don't think there's a God. I don't believe she was the first one. So, but she was one that probably had a good speaking voice and kind of became the spokesperson for that line of thought. And as that progressed, then we kind of see the spectrum of people that live in America. Now, I mean, if America is a melting pot for different folks from different countries, then I also believe that it's a melting pot for thought as well. And that's kind of a scary statement I just made. There's a lot of people that probably just freaked out when they heard that. But it's the truth. If we welcome people from other countries, then we should also welcome people with different beliefs or non-beliefs. And that's just what America is. And so with this kind of person kind of stepping out and saying, I'm an American, but I'm also American that doesn't believe there is a God. That's what she and many others said. So I think that really kind of woke up Americans to, well, we need to kind of welcome them as well. And as we kind of look back to what we've already talked about, I mean, obviously, I mean, that's going to be concerning to them, the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, possibly the money, different things as that. Now, as we move forward, then we can see, you know, the different cases that have been brought by, there is the lawyer in Northern California, and his name escapes me at the time. But, you know, there have been a lot of different court cases about wording, about school prayer, about that kind of a thing being, you know, removed or have folks stepping out or whatever. Also, the ACLU, it's been discussed before. They also hear a lot of cases about separation of church and state, obviously, is probably their biggest things to do. But let's kind of come in for a landing, and let's really talk more specifically. I want to talk about Christmas time. Christmas time. Now, obviously, we have a lot of different thoughts. We have a lot of different religions. But it's interesting to me that probably, you know, Christmas is the most interesting time of year because that's when you hear the most talk about how it is celebrated. So in this, it was, I mean, more intriguing this year, or last year, I'm sorry, than any other year, with the Seattle airport having to remove every type of Christmas decoration because they didn't want to get sued and they didn't want to offend anybody.
They didn't want to leave anyone out.
They didn't want to leave anybody out because, I mean, let's face it. And again, I'm not poking fun at anyone, but I'm saying we have Kwanzaa, you know, we have Hanukkah, we have Christian folks, we have atheist folks, we have all kind of different religions that run the full spectrum. How are you going to represent all of them? Now, I mean, sure, there's going to be somebody who goes, well, they could just deal with it. Well, but is that truly American? And that's the question I pose. How can we do it? First of all, my opinion, I don't think it is right to say, well, nobody can do anything. I mean, that doesn't seem American at all.
Makes fun out of life.
Well, absolutely. And you know, I mean, I think there is a point where things just go too far. If you've got jets flying over your house and neon signs that are 130 feet tall, whatever. I mean, there is a point, but I mean, is America free to express your beliefs? And I'm just going to open that up. What does anyone have to say about that as far as Christmas? I mean,
I'd say to some extent, you know, you're free to do essentially say whatever you want, but in recent years, you've got. I can definitely see where you're coming from. It's really hard, not only for Christians, if you want to look at it and turn it around, it's really hard for, you know, Muslims. Mm-hmm. There's such a, I don't know exactly how to put it, but society has put a stamp on Christians that essentially is similar to these fundamentalists such as Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell,
mm-hmm.
who are the warriors. And on the side of Islam, you put the stamp on Islam of the Islamic extremists. And I think that, above all, is really leading to this, you know, this outrage over Christmas and a lot of these lawsuits from the secular people, because they don't want people on that really fundamentalist side to be swamping society with their very extreme beliefs, when in fact the majority of the country is very moderate.
It's true.
That's just where I stand on it.
Yep.
I might disagree just a little bit, because I think it started long before. Well, I'm young, so long before may not be long before, but before at least Iraq fundamentalism and 9/11 or what have you. I think maybe what was happening in the beginning was this whole concept that people just assumed everyone was Christian and.
Okay.
This manifestation of celebrating Christmas holidays was leaving out a huge amount of Americans, and we wanted to be a part of the mainstream. We wanted to have a voice. We wanted to have a place, and there was no place for us. And we didn't want to not just be assumed to be a Christian, but to be socially pariahed in a way if we weren't a part of it. So I think there was an effort to make a space for us. And I think it's swung very far to where people are just afraid to be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Can you mute me for a second?
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Trying to find you, and I don't know. Okay.
Okay.
You
might
hear
some
parents. I got it. Okay. And that's a definite point is that as America grows, I think America grows out instead of, taller. I mean, we get more and more people here, and they believe different things. And then it becomes very difficult to find a way for everyone to kind of join in on the point of, what do you do at Christmas time? Do you celebrate Christmas at all? You know, so, I mean, my beliefs aren't everybody's beliefs. And I guess that's kind of hard for folks to kind of get their brain around. I mean, I don't know. Especially in the corporate environment. Obviously, that's kind of been set for a long time because that is a place where people, you know, spend 8 hours a day. And that's definitely a place where, you know, you have to be very kind of careful about what you express, what you put on your desk. And it can be kind of, you know, tough. But anyway, Christmas time, I think, is a pivotal point. I mean, and definitely there's a lot of different points and beliefs and what people do and how their houses are decorated and what they're going to do and all that. But let's kind of move into another, unless there is any other comments.
No, not on my end.
Okay.
No, you're good to go.
Okay, cool.
Sorry.
Let's talk about something that is definitely going to be kind of a hot button, but let's talk about the president. I think unless you're, I don't know, in some hill somewhere without any TV for the last 10 years, you know that George Bush is a Christian man. I mean, that just goes without saying. But I think what I want to know is what's interesting is I think even before, you know, or maybe it was because of the different decisions that he had made about Iraq. We're definitely not going to talk about that here. But what I want to say is that every time he suggests someone either to the cabinet or to a seat as far as a judge, he is just questioned on down the line about how they believe. Now, I totally understand that a judge has to be neutral in how they decide different cases. But I want to talk specifically about the president. I mean, are we seeing that a president has got to be religiously neutral? I mean, because it seems like everything he chooses out of his experience that he has got to be set to a certain standard, which isn't going to offend anyone. I mean, what do you think about this, Andrew? I mean, does a president have to kind of check his religious beliefs at the door somehow before he can be presidential and making decisions, or what?
Well, I think it's really hard to ask anybody to be completely neutral, but yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. When looking at it in the big scope of things, he's criticized on almost everything he does. And you look back to President Clinton, first President Bush, the presidency is under such a microscope because of the mass media today.
Mm.
That something as divisive as religion, you really do have to come across as someone who's appeals to, you know, the entire spectrum. And just a quick interesting story about George W. Bush. When he was the governor of Texas, he was addressing a Jewish group, and he was talking about it because it was very recent that he had, formed a special bond with Billy Graham, and he was talking about an argument that he used to have with his mother about who was going to heaven. And he accidentally, instead of saying only born-again Christians are going to heaven, he said only Christians are going to heaven.
Mm.
And even at that point, as just the governor of Texas, it just created such an uproar.
Sure.
Now, it's easy to see, you know, he just had a slip of the tongue. Nobody's ever accused George W. Bush of being a great orator. But you've got everything is under such a microscope in terms of religion, regardless of whether you're the governor of Rhode Island or you're the president of the United States. I think it's real hard to ask someone to be neutral, but as we go forward, it's going to be more and more important that you have guys like Rudy Giuliani who's emerging as one of the leaders for 2008. He's not necessarily affiliated with religion. On the other side, you've got guys like Mitt Romney, who's a Mormon, and that's going to play very heavily into his campaign. So that's why I would say guys like Giuliani might have a leg up, because they're not necessarily known first and foremost for their religion. It's better just to kind of keep it, you know, tucked under the rug, I think.
Okay, you are unmuted. Did you have a comment?
Yeah. I had a comment.
Okay.
I would have to agree that I think there, you people who have who are more what's the word, not non-religious but secular in how they present themselves are going to have a leg up, because I think it would be very difficult. Say a pagan became president, or even, I don't think we've ever had a Jewish president, correct me if I'm wrong, and when Kennedy was a Catholic, you know, it was this big deal, and I think people would have been very afraid if they were very outspoken and really inserting their religion or their faith into the political nature that they do. So I think that the same goes on the other side, that, you know, people get a little nervous if there's a lot of Christianity being injected, and I think that it really helps a candidate to reach out across, you know, the country or the state, whatever his or her base is, if they are more neutral. And I think it's very difficult for a candidate because there's so many people they can alienate that can vote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would have to. I definitely agree with the majority of what you said. I think another point we have to raise is Israel, because it's such a hot-button issue. And you've got, going back to Nixon, who was a strict Mormon, he supported, and then you got Carter, who everybody knows Jimmy Carter is a very good Christian. But he was sort of the first one, I guess because Israel in 1949, you don't have that many presidents who have been in office since its inception. But Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan in particular really have been able to separate their religious beliefs on the nation of Israel being God's land, separating that from the political instability and situation of the country now, which in fact would tell us that Israel's made a lot of crappy decisions in the past, you know, 50 years in terms of military movements. Now, they're very strong, so they can really do what they want, but they've done a lot of things that, you know, if we weren't bound to them because of our religion, I think we'd be a lot more objective in some of the decisions their leaders have made. And George W. Bush and Bill Clinton have been have tied themselves up with their religion and how they've dealt with Israel. They've been very, very soft towards the nation. So, it's going to be very interesting to watch in the next couple of years how this next president acts towards Israel.
Well, and just the spectrum of kind of what we mentioned. I mean, the pagan folks and the Mormon folks and the Jewish folks and the landscape of belief now is very, very varied and different. And I think the thing that really kind of concerns me is are we going to elect robots that really have no originality or uniqueness?
Yeah, I don't know. Which lobbyists would they have in their pocket?
I don't know. But I mean...
Silicon Valley.
Obviously, you as any type of leader, you don't want to offend, a group, anyone, I guess, that you want to try to not offend. But I think at some point you stop becoming you. You stop being unique, and that's what concerns me. I would hope that the concern is, I would hope that people would always be, open to kind of see. And I don't know. I totally understand that the diverseness of the landscape of the people, especially a president here in America, is that it's such a, obviously in other countries as well, but in America in particular, it's such a varied landscape that you really have to think about the whole group of people instead of just what you think. And I get that, but I think it's going to backfire at some point when you no one really has any kind of driving, I don't know, sense of something. And that, I'll just register that, and that's just kind of a general comment. But it definitely it is a much different time than it was in the past. I think it's good. You know, I mean, we definitely talked about 9/11, and after that, there was kind of that polarization as all of this people group is bad because of this one event. And I think that still happens. Whatever group you are part of, as far as a belief system, the bad element of that perhaps is in the news or discussed, sometimes is the focal point, and people say, well, those type of folks are just like that event or that person. You know, and whether you agree or not, I think that happens all the time. Is it right? No. You know, there are bad elements of any type of belief or group. Believe me, there's plenty of time when Pat Robertson starts talking or Jerry Falwell starts talking. I'm kind of looking for a good Catholic church to kind of duck into somewhere or something else, because it seems like the biggest religious mouth with the biggest TV station just gets me more and more concerned, because they're just some silly stuff that's going on. But I think it's good to kind of take a pulse check and find out who's out there. What do they think? Why do they think it? And not to get in an argument, but just why? Because the world is not all about me. And I mean, except for maybe my first wife, I don't know. I think everybody understands that. But I mean, I just think that it's just like Andrew said, it's going to be very interesting as we move forward into, you know, the next presidency. I mean, we have the possibility of having the first female president, looks like, and also I have the ability to have the first African-American president. I mean, there are different very choices that are coming for us in the future. I just think that it's a point where, I don't know, I hope people listen more and throw less stones. I don't know. That is my hope. And I cling to that. So,
I think that you bring up a really good point with pluralism, though. And I'm a very pluralistic person, but it has caused me to struggle a lot with, if you include everything and you say, well, everybody's different and everybody has their opinions and everything's okay, you almost seem to lose some sort of cohesion with which to move forward. Mm. What values do you act on? Where do you draw your lines? Where do you draw your boundaries? And it can turn into a chaos of sorts.
Mm.
And a lot of times nations and cultures have been bound by religion. And if we're going to say, you know what, we're going to embrace your religion, you can think what you want, and we take that out of the equation, then we have to ask, well, what does it mean for us to be American? What values and mores are we going to hold to, and what are we going to use as our deciding factors to propel ourselves forward? And that's really what our presidents, you know, are going to have to work from. And if they can do that and we can find that cohesion, then I think a president can express their religions, because we have faith in them that they're going to go through with this collective decision on what we think Americans are.
Mm-hmm. I am gingerly going to step into this next section, but I think if we kind of take a look at it from farther back, we'll kind of see, and I'll make sure we make it through. There are two main political groups, right? The Democrats and the Republicans. If you were to take a poll of most Christians and you would ask them, well, what should a Christian be? Who should they align with? You would probably hear majority of the time Republican Party. But I want to kind of roll the clock back. It's the question comes up a lot is Why do certain groups of Christians vote for the Democrat line of thinking? And what is interesting to me, and there's different kind of things I've seen around is, you know, how would Jesus vote, let's just say, for, you know, just a point of fact. And I think what's interesting is the Democrats see a lot of social issues, different things about the poor, different things about education and all that. But the Republicans seem to kind of polarize around the abortion question. And I think that it is interesting that there was a shift from, let's say, if you were a Christian person and you were voting for a Democrat, that they've shifted over to the Republican thought. And what's also interesting is that the other Libertarian Party and other different parties, they're actually kind of ramping up. And you know, Perot, think what you will. You know, I think that there's a lot of other types of groups that are kind of coming forward with their own candidate. What do you guys think about that? I mean, are two parties enough? Do you think, you know, the Green Party or whatever, do you think, you know, maybe we'll see a third party kind of make a big appearance in the next election?
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that, because just yesterday I was just looking around on YouTube or something, and one of my favorite shows is Law and Order. Always been a big fan of it. And Sam Waterston, who plays Jack McCoy on there, he's promoting this party called Unity 08. And essentially what it is it's you go, you sign up, and you vote over the internet for one Republican and one Democrat to run on a unity ticket for the presidential election in 08. Basically, it's trying to cut out all the backdoor deals, all the funding, spending, all that stuff, trying to cut out the middleman and put somebody, you know, in the smack dab in the middle of Washington to end the corruption. Because even though, you know, I think he actually says, a lot of people felt like the 2006 election was a breath of fresh air, honestly, because, you know, regardless of what you believe, the Republicans in Congress weren't exactly accomplishing a lot. And so people thought, you know, the Democrats in. But the issue still remains. You've still got problems with lobbyists. You've got problems with overspending. And so I think, I really do like this Unity 08 deal where it takes the issue back to the people, where you've got Americans voting for president rather than, you know, people in New Hampshire and Iowa, not saying anything against them, but the people in New Hampshire, Iowa, and in my home state of South Carolina, by the time they get out of the South Carolina primary, essentially the candidate's been picked. And so I really do like that. And I think religion will play a big factor also in, you know, in who's picked, because it seems like average Joe off the street actually has a more perceptive view on somebody rather than these talking heads and people who, you know, have their own agendas as to who they want in office because, you know, they want Roe v. Wade overturned or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's just my view.
We're going to take a brief pause and play a couple of annoying ads, and then we'll be right back. So give me just a second here. Because that's not heard, so I guess we won't be doing that. Skype is fun. I like Skype, especially when I have to call back on my other phone. So, let me just make a couple of announcements, and we'll jump back into it, is that Ronnie's Own Productions is working on a huge, massive audio project with different podcasters and different areas around, and it's called Podenstein. And Podenstein sounds a lot like Frankenstein, and that's very interesting that you would make that connection. So it involves an evil scientist with an experiment that goes terribly wrong. So So I just wanted to bring that up, and you'll hear more about that as things progress. So also the Star Wars parody show, Tatooine TV, that the monster that will not die. I've tried to cancel that show 40 times, and people just seem to love it. So avail yourself of that at RoniZone.com, and we will continue that, as well as Ear Giggles and other things. And then I want to talk briefly about the New World Army dramatic audio production that RoniZone Productions is putting together. I'm very excited about it. And it is an apocalyptic story with a whodunit. I mean, the first episode just is very Lost-like. And you see these people that are thrown together in the situations, and you know very little about them. And then the things that transpire and the things that occur over time are just pretty incredible. So Miss Aura is in the cast, and I'll be doing some audio work, and also William. What are your just kind of preemptive thoughts about it, Aura, about the New World Army?
Oh, well, I'm very, very excited about it. One thing that I like is that it's a female protagonist. There's so many things out there where it's always the guy out front, but it also has the other thing that I like about it is that it constantly keeps you on your toes. You come in right in the middle of it, and you're going to get satisfied in the end, I think, but it's still going to leave you hanging in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that about it. It's also very testosterone's not the right word.
Mm-hmm.
Too often, I think, when we have a female protagonist, it gets too mushy, but there's going to be explosions and there's going to be robots, and I think those are all good things.
Well, yeah. You know, Andrew's probably hearing about a lot of this for the first time, so it is definitely probably the most diverse story I've ever written. And actually, just a quick story about it is my original inception. I was talking to a guy I work with, and I kind of laid it out, and I said, it's going to be this and this and that. And he looked at me, he goes, it's a Messiah story. You're only going to get three groups of people that even understand what you're talking about. He goes, change it. And so I did. So the first leg of the story goes in a certain direction, and then I just turn it all around. And the rest of the story is just a total whole different path. And but I really try to kind of write way outside the box, and I think I've done it. And Miss Aura is going to help us out to kind of keep the female point of view pretty solid in it. And William will keep me on track too, because William's the kind of person that can look at something and say, well, didn't you say it was going to be this? Why are they saying this now? Like, oh, I forgot. Because I get involved in the story aspect, and so I need people to kind of help me with the full scope. But I'm really excited about it. If you've listened to other RoniZone radio shows, you've probably heard of or about other groups that do some just fantastic old-time radio type of drama stuff, and to be honest, I was challenged by that, and I said, I've got to do something equal or better than that, because they were so good. And so that's kind of what led me to just kind of dig in deep with this, but I really want this to be something incredible. So keep an eye out for New World Army, and we will hopefully all see its end as it comes together. So now let's kind of jump back in. Mr. William, is he back with us? No, poor guy.
Oh.
He's he got kicked off by Skype. I think everyone's off.
I'm still here.
You, me, and Andrew, man. We're the last. See, we believe in fun. Are you on Skype, Ara?
I am on Skype, but I had actually gotten kicked off the last time we did this, and so I sucked it up and spent the $15 to buy it for the year. So it seems to be behaving now.
It's actually it's not a bad thing at all, and I think it's cool to kind of have that option, save little money for domestic calls. So I don't want to turn this into an ad, but I think I kind of want to wrap this up right now. We have definitely kind of covered a lot of ground, and we've covered it in a way that I think is going to hopefully spurn on a lot of good discussion. We've talked about the future. We've talked about the next election. We've talked about the past. And we've talked about some of the difficulties that America has kind of ridden through. And I would hope that we have seen that America is much more diverse than we had probably ever thought. And the more people I come in contact with, the more I see it more and more. And I think it's one thing to be closely connected with people that think similarly to you. Sometimes you forget that there's other people that think differently. And I have to be the first one to admit I'm first in line for that. And but what I do want to say, too, is that I think if you really care about other people and you really begin to get to know them and you in my mind, in my own life, close my yap and open my ears, I think that you can be a fuller person and still hold on to your beliefs, but also learn from other people how they got to where they got to. And that discussion and that connection with people doesn't have to change what you believe, but it can kind of enhance how you reach out to other folks. And I think that it's important to discuss and not throw stones. I mean, there's 30,000 radio shows where people can call and get slammed and get kicked off the phone, and that's not healthy for anybody. But I hope that this is a continuation of what Roni's Own Radio is. I am who I am. I believe what I believe. But when we have the show, I want it to be discussed in an open arena where a lot of different people with a lot of different points of view can come and ask questions, make comments, as long as we're respectful. I mean, there may be some points where people get offended, and that's when, you know, we need to kind of talk things out. But this is kind of a beginning of where I want things to go. And so we're going to end it now, and I thank everybody for showing up. And tell your friends that Roni's Own Radio is a wild ride, and Jeff Roni made it through probably his craziest show ever. So thanks so much for showing up, guys, and we will talk to you later. See ya.